from the Gospel of Matthew. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on the mountainside. After he had sat down, his disciples gathered around him, and he began to teach them. How blessed are the poor in spirit. The reign of God is theirs. Blessed too are the sorrowing. They shall be consoled. Blessed are the lowly. They will inherit the land. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst for holiness. They shall have their fill. Blessed are they who show mercy. Mercy shall be theirs. Blessed are the single-hearted, for they shall see God. Blessed too the peacemakers. They shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those persecuted for holiness' sake. The reign of God is theirs. Blessed are you when they insult you and persecute you and utter every kind of slander against you because of me. Be glad and rejoice, for your reward is great in heaven. They persecuted the prophets before you in the very same way. The Gospel of the Lord.
So, is there room in your inn? Now, obviously this comes from the scripture about Joseph and Mary, and there's no room in the inn. But really it comes from a story about that. There is a story, and for those of you who've been on our retreats before, you've heard me say this by Christmas time retreats anyway. There's a story about this one-room grade school, you know, the type that we used to have when I was growing up. There's about 30 kids in this one-room grade school, and one teacher that had all 30 kids, and then, of course, she was in charge of everything else. She was the head teacher, the principal, the secretary, all those things, as well as she had to do the Christmas program. So she's getting these kids organized, there's one child, Jimmy, I don't know why it's always Jimmy, one child, Jimmy, that, you know, struggled a lot. And Jimmy would probably have a touch of Down syndrome. She worked very hard on Jimmy, but, you know, you never knew what was going to happen with Jimmy. You never knew what he was going to say. So she's figuring all the pieces are, and she says, okay, who wants to be Joseph? And Jimmy raises his hand. Okay, Jimmy, I think we're going to give that to Joey. He's a little older, and I think he'd be better, you know. And who wants to be Jesus? And Jimmy, actually, I think we'll probably just use a doll. Who wants to be Mary? And Jimmy raises his hand, I think we'll get Sarah. Finally, she's trying to think of what everybody gets to the innkeeper. Who wants to be the innkeeper? Okay, Jimmy, we're going to let you be the innkeeper. So they practice, and all that Jimmy has is one line. He has to say it three times. The line is, nope, no room here. He practices and practices and practices. So they get to the night of the great performance, and of course they got the sheep going across, the little wire in front, and Joseph and Mary come out, and it's the whole Christmas scene. And then they get to Joseph and Mary coming to Bethlehem, and Joseph knocks, and Jimmy pulls over the curtain, and before Joseph can even ask anything, nope, no room here, slams the curtain. Joseph and Mary come around, they walk around, come again. Jimmy remembers they're supposed to wait for Joseph to ask, so he pulls open the curtain and Joseph says, this is my wife Mary, and she's going to have a baby, and we need a place to sit. Nope, no room here. Okay, so teacher's thinking, okay, things are going pretty good. Comes around, knocks again, knock, knock, knock. Jimmy opens the curtain. Joseph says, my name is Joseph, and this is my wife Mary. She's very pregnant. We need a place to stay. stay. Do you have any room here? Silence. And the teacher's like, oh, God, this line. How can you forget this line? And she's just about ready to go out on stage to encourage Jimmy. And Jimmy looks out and says, that's okay, Joseph. You can have my bed. Of course, there wasn't a dry eye in the place. And it changed the whole Christmas story. And yet it was everything that the Christmas story was about. And it's that is kind of the impetus. Look and act stupider than I am, and of course I might be stupider than most people think. I mean, you know, stupider is a good word. But it's an idea of, are we going to change our story to let Christ in a little more? And maybe our story is our locked-in perspective. Maybe our story is opening up and seeing reality a little bigger. Maybe our story is, I don't know what to do with this quality I have, or this liability I have, or what to do with my dysfunctional family, or what to do with my children that I love dearly, but I don't know how to help, what to do with whatever. And how do I let Christ encounter me? And how do I let him in? I want to take a look at, this is Pope Francis's Evangelii Gaudium, the joy of the gospel that came out in 2013. He's coming off of Pope Benedict's The Light of Faith encyclical. And really powerful, and I'm enamored by Pope Francis. I love John Paul II, I love Benedict XVI. I have to say I was pleasantly, not that it matters, but I care about the Pope, you know, they're saying where I'm at. That doesn't make any difference. But I love Benedict XVI. I was surprised, not in a overwhelming surprise, but Benedict's, if you read Benedict's writings, I mean, the pastoral care of Benedict is incredible. Most people kind of wrote that off as he was the head of the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith and thought, okay, here's this German, that's going to be, before you read his stuff, and it's like, wow, this guy was a pastor par excellence. And I don't know if you ever read from the public media, everyone's kind of allowed that, because they weren't expecting that. Francis has enamored the public media. You know, they can't quite make out, well, who is this guy? No. And yet, you read this stuff, and he's, from my perspective, again, it doesn't matter. But you read this stuff, and it just kind of engages the stuff of the world. And isn't afraid to talk about, well, all these things. This is where we're at, and we need to recognize the mess we're in. Good news of the gospel. You need to stand up for the truth and everything that is good and true and holy, and not be afraid to embrace the sinner. And he just says that, and of course, in my opinion, so the ultimate right wingers, in one sense, if you want to call it that, will say, well, what he means by this is this. And the left wingers will say, and boy, yeah, he's really coming to our side of the fence. And the He's just talking about life. And so much of, at least my journey in the last, this is struggle with balance. Finding that balance and engaging it. But this is what I'd like you to kind of think about. I'm talking about engaging in the gospel of joy. Francis is very, very strong about joy of the gospel that we are called to experience. He says, I invite all Christians everywhere at this very moment to a renewed personal encounter with Jesus Christ. Or at least an openness to letting him encounter them. I ask all of you to do this unfailingly each day. No one should think that this invitation is not meant for him or her, since, quote, no one is excluded from the joy brought by the Lord, end quote. The Lord does not disappoint those who take this risk. Whenever we take a step toward Jesus, we come to realize that he is already there waiting for us with open arms. Now is the time to say to Jesus, Lord, I have let myself be deceived in a thousand ways. I have shunned your love. Yet here I am once more to renew my covenant with you. I need you. Save me once again, Lord. Take me once more into your redeeming embrace. How good it feels to come back to him whenever we are lost. Let me say this once more. I love this line. God never tires of forgiving us. We are the ones who tire of seeking his mercy. Christ, who told us to forgive one another 70 times 7, has given us his example. He has forgiven us 70 times 7. Time and time again, he bears us on his shoulders. No one can strip us of the dignity bestowed upon us by this boundless and unfailing love. With a tenderness which never disappoints, it is always capable of restoring our joy. He makes it possible for us to lift up our heads and to start anew. Let us not flee from the resurrection of Jesus. Let us never give up, come what will. May nothing inspire more than his life, which impels us on. And he goes on to say, I can say that the most beautiful and natural expression of joy which I have seen in my life are in the poor people who have little to hold on to. I also think that the real joy is shown by others who, even amid pressing professional obligations, were able to reserve an detachment and simplicity, a heart full of faith. In their own way, all these instances of joy flow from the infinite love of God, who has revealed himself to us in Jesus Christ. I never tire of repeating those words of Benedict XVI, which take us to the very heart of the gospel. And this is from his The Light of Faith, Benedict 16 says. I remember when I first read this saying, wow, that's incredible. He says, being a Christian is not the result of an ethical choice or a lofty idea. the encounter with an event, a person, which gives life a new horizon and a decisive direction. Let's say about a 10-year meditation. Again, I don't want to fit it into a little cove, but it's about a person and an encounter with a person. It's a gift, but it's an encounter. He says, thanks, this is now Francis, thanks solely to this encounter for a renewed which is what the new evangelization is about. New evangelization is about a renewed encounter with Christ that sets us on fire. When we're on fire, we can't help but share. So a renewed encounter with God's love, which blossoms into an enriching friendship. We are liberated from our narrowness and self-absorption. We are liberated from our narrowness and self-absorption. We become fully human when we become more than human, when we let God bring us beyond ourselves in order to attain the fullest truth of our being. Here we find the source and the inspiration of all our efforts at evangelization. For if we have received the love which restores meaning to our lives, how can we fail to share that love with others? Good stuff. So, the gospel. I encourage you, there should be a Bible in here, I believe. I encourage you maybe during this next couple of days or maybe during this Advent season. The Sermon on the Mount is kind of a gospel within the Gospel of Matthew. It's Matthew chapters 5 through 9, something like that, 8. Somewhere in that range, chapters. Starts with the Beatitudes, and then it kind of gives us the new moral code. But immediately after the Beatitudes is that you are the salt of the earth, you are the light of the world. I need you, is what Jesus says. This is at the beginning of his public ministry, and gets to the end of his public ministry, he says, before he is ascended into heaven, he says, you know, I'm going to send you the Holy Spirit, and you're going to do greater things than I did. Not impossible, because it's the Holy Spirit, and it's what I had limited access as a human being. Now, you have to go out and make connections. But the Beatitudes, in my perspective, they're the pathway of conversion. What do I mean by that? How do you first enable others? How do I first enable myself to encounter Christ? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Interesting, in Mark's gospel, it's just blessed are the poor. Matthew says, blessed are the poor in spirit. What does it mean to be poor in spirit? It means that you're unattached. And that you recognize, I recognize that I am dependent. Good way. is the Son God and He God for us? What are the things that I think are going to bring me real happiness in this world that in the end, you know, isn't going to happen? Again, they can be good things even. But to be unattached so that I can let Christ into my heart. Is there room in my head? What do I have to let go of so that I can let into? And then, the second, and maybe I'm just, I know I'm slow, so for me it's amazing. I hardly can get through the first two Beatitudes, and then I'm like, okay, I'm overwhelmed. I can't even get to the rest. But the second Beatitude, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. And maybe what kind of pulled me to that initially is thinking of mourning as just sadness. And you know, as a boy growing up and those kind of things, and I would say through my seminary years, so up until I was 25, probably the greatest emotion I think I ever felt was sadness. And it was had to do with my father's death as he died when I was 13. I kind of let go of it. I always thought when my dad died, I thought the world should have stopped and it didn't. And I was sad. And I was angry. Now, most people don't know that, I don't think. But in those things, you know, I wonder what people really think of it. I thought I covered it pretty good, maybe I didn't. But that aside is not what he's talking about by sorrow. What Matthew's talking about by sorrow is, blessed are those that mourn, is mourning our sinfulness. And not just our sinfulness, but the sinfulness of the world. And this is really important. Not in a beaten-up way. Not in a dysfunctional guilt that so many people want to throw on to the Catholic Church. Yeah, you have that, just that Catholic guilt all the time. So, unless we can be honest with ourselves and honest about the mess of our lives, can't let it go. We can't be free. So we have to want God in our lives. And then we have to recognize that He came to forgive us. And it's real. It's real. And then we can start to have that feeling, like I said, and get past those first two to get to the others, but know to have a heart that seeks, that is single-hearted, that just wants to be in that relationship with Christ, that have a heart that seeks after what is right and true and holy. To have a heart that wants peace, again, peace, day at Mass. I want you to think about how many times we say the word peace. You'll be surprised. But what is that peace? Peace is that right relationships with God, other self. Peace is the result of what Mother Teresa says: prayer, faith, love, service, peace. No, I want peace right now. You guys are like, yeah, I gotta go through these steps. We're in an immediate gratification world. I kind of bypass that. I just jump to peace. So, you know, just looking at this journey, Now, I can throw something totally different out at you. Well, I don't know, totally different. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm very blessed in my life that one of my very good friends in the seminary was a recovering drug addict alcoholic. Actually, when he came to seminary, he was recovering drug addict alcoholic, and he decided in the seminary that, you know, I'm a drug addict. I don't think I'm an alcoholic. And so he used to go out drinking. I think I'm a girl with him. Seemed fine to me. What I didn't realize is I went out with him on Friday night, and somebody else went out with him on Saturday night, and somebody else went out with him on Sunday afternoon. The guy's a 4-0 student, a genius. He studied his tail off so he could go out at night and drink. And then after several years and kind of running and hiding and all these things, finally it kind of turns into an alcoholic as well. And I've been a priest for 23 years and does incredible work in his parish, but also in the AA movement and the NA movement and other things. But I want you to know, the 12-step program is the most successful self-help program in the world. In my experience, through my friend, I used to go to open AA meetings with him, which means it's open to the public and still. Anonymity, but not how the calls go. And I even went to an NA conference with him one time, which was interesting because, you get talking to all these people, they start telling you a story, then they kind of look to you and say, yeah, I said, well, I'm not really back. It's okay, Jim. It's okay. And we all started there.
I think I'm okay.
At the end of it, I wanted to be okay. But it was the most, honestly, and as I reflect on Francis, it doesn't matter what I think, but it's his perspective, probably the most, the closest thing that maybe I've experienced to what a Catholic Christian community should look like. What do I mean by that? They have all kinds of issues. But what I mean by that piece of it is, you just come together and you're accepted and they're all about trying to become healthier and better. And the first thing for a recovering alcoholic or drug addict is that they got to be recovered. They can't get to the other stuff until they're free. Now, sometimes, and my friend will tell you that's the problem with the 12-step program is sometimes that's the only step. And if that's where you live the rest of your life is, I'm free. You're still going to be dysfunctional. And you can be a dry drunk, where you have all the same symptoms and you never get past that. But listen to these steps. First step is, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Second step, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Third, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Our life is unmanageable. Stuff of this world. So I have to turn my heart and my will over to a higher power that can restore me to sanity. Step four, a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Searching and fearless. Step five, and have been blessed also to know a lot of, or several parole officers. Not sure why. They're just send me parole ladies who part of their terms, legal terms, who they have to go to AA meetings. Part of the AA meetings is you have to work the steps. So when they get to the fifth step, sometimes they need somebody to go to. So they, once in a while, I'll get somebody that I never met before comes in and does their fifth step. The fifth step is admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. The willingness to recognize, admit, and then tell somebody else. And I always feel like with the fifth step, and sometimes the fifth step that I work with somebody is pretty superficial. Most of the time, I mean, I'm sitting on the other side of hearing these stories, and holy cow, wow, I just want to give them absolution. But they may not be Catholic, you know. We talk about that in time of God's forgiveness. It's only when they can vomit it up that they can start to feel better. And it's not about feeling better, but they can be free. Okay, that's what reconciliation is about. Just reading Pope Francis had a published article that he had published when he was the Cardinal of Buenos Aires. It was after a big political corruption thing. And he made some Cosmos article about this being sin and corruption. He's always about, again, remember this thing about God never grows tired of forgiving us. The corruption happens when we justify our sinfulness and pretend that it's not simple at all. And the Lord can't work with that because we don't want to. Hey, goes on. Step seven goes. Be entirely ready to give, to have God remove all these defects of character. You're willing to let him in our end. We humbly ask them to remove our shortcomings. We made a list of all the persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. We made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Blessed are peacemakers. Blessed are those who thirst for holiness and righteousness. We continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. Praying only for knowledge and of his will for us, and the power to carry that out. Step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I mean, I'm not the only one there, but people say the attitudes are the 12 steps put in a language that deals with alcoholism and drug addiction. But I think all of us, and that's why I love it so much, is that journey of openness and engaging. And it's that journey of letting Christ into the end. And we say at every Mass, you know, Lord, I'm not worthy to enter under my roof. crazy thing, it's sort of ironic. It's about our willingness to let him be in control. You have to make a decision, and yet the decision is to say, I'm going to give up my decisions. Lord, help. So as we begin this day of retreat, just encourage you maybe take one of those thoughts and anything I may have said. Just let it sort of percolate. How does it challenge you? But not in a, please, not in a, boy, I'm horrible, I'm so far to go. We all do. But in this way that says, Lord, how can I encounter you more? And in that encounter, you just want to put his arms around us and say, hey,